This is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling, skating at full strength today. I'm Gabe Knudsen from ESPN Milwaukee, Brian Rowitz from ESPN West Palm, and catch him on ESPN 1000 in Chicago. Also on Sundays, part of Busted Open Radio on Sirius XM from 9 to noon Eastern. He is Jonathan Hood. All right, guys, we have made it. We have made it to the month of April, which means we are just 16 days away from night one of WrestleMania out in Las Vegas. Brian Rowitz, by the way, he is going to be there representing GKW. But our question is here is simple. We've got a handful of matches that we know are official. Randy Orton versus KO, Reigns, Punk, Rollins, Triple Threat, Rhodes versus Cena, Stratton versus Charlotte, Gunther versus Jey Uso, AJ Styles versus Logan Paul, and I mean, I guess it's Io Sky versus Bianca Belair, but I mean, it's going to be Io Sky, Bianca Belair, and Rhea Ripley. I guess that's not quite official yet. I think we can project that one out. Yeah.
And I think project Naomi and Jade.
Maybe. Sure.
If you want to, I don't feel as confident projecting that one as right. I feel confident protecting that they're going to throw mommy into the women's world title triple threat. But rank the top three. What are the WrestleMania matches that you are most invested in?
I think you're a little early on the election results there, Broitz, on that one. That sounds like a strong SmackDown, a strong Raw to me. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean. I mean, Backlash. I mean, that seems like a great match to lead off Backlash, if you ask me. I digress.
Yes, I think that's true. You know, this is actually a difficult question because even though we know once we get to WrestleMania that a lot of this is going to pay off and it's going to be really great action in Las Vegas. But, I mean, it starts with Cody and Cena because I believe that the intensity has ratcheted up even more so. I think the verbal back and forth between the two was great. A little inside, but I think all three of us like that. And so there's some things that I think that was shoot, some things that probably was part of the story. I think that was great. And then I get a little stuck because I look at this three-way dance with Rollins, Reigns, and Punk. And even though Rollins just absolutely went crazy, thinking that Punk does not deserve the opportunity to be in the WrestleMania main event night one, I think that matchup is going to deliver. And then I get even more stuck because we've seen Gunther and Uso in the ring so much. It's like, dude, like, is this match ever going to take place? We've seen them so much in this build. It's kind of like the only new level to it is that Jimmy Uso got his ass whooped and he bled on Monday night. So some of these matches
Moxley.
Yeah. I mean, so and again, on Raw, which is a whole different WWE than we're used to, right? So there's two matches in particular, but I'm stuck for a third, bro.
Yeah, that's fair. So to me, I flipped those top two. We've talked about how that triple threat doesn't need to be a triple threat with Roman, Rollins, Punk. Any combination of those three one-on-one is the Mania main event. Instead, we get the triple threat. To me, I'm most interested in that because of the Heyman aspect, because of the favor, because the way they've been playing that up. I thought it was an awesome ending to SmackDown. They were not exactly timed out too well. It was a little up against the break, even though it was a tape show. But besides that, like, I'm invested in that and seeing what it is. And that's because of Paul Heyman. I'm sort of expecting him to turn on Roman, and Paul Heyman becomes that much more interesting. So to me, that tops my list over Cena and Cody right now.
I don't even know if I would put, I mean, by default, I think Roman, Punk, and Rollins ends up on the list. Because as you said, and again, we've talked about it at length here on GKW, any combination of a one-on-one match all the way in, the triple threat, despite them trying to explain it the best that they can, still just it feels a little too forced for me. I haven't quite been able to connect. Hood, to your point, I thought the promo battle was great. Like, we finally got those two face-to-face, and I know we talked about this last week. Hey, have Cody come out first and dictate the terms. Well, Cody didn't come out first, but he came out before John Cena said a word. So then we got that pretty good back and forth. And again, John Cena hasn't lost his fastball on the microphone, stepping up and some of the things he said. My favorite being, it's not where your tattoo is. It's what your tattoo is that says it about what that tells us all we need to know about you. I thought that was fantastic. So Cena certainly still had his fastball when it came to going back and forth with someone on a promo. So one for me, without a doubt, is Cena versus Rhodes because, I mean, John is really interesting. I'm curious to see how they do this, if The Rock somehow gets involved. Drew McIntyre is laying in the wait out there saying he's got something interesting with The Rock coming, so I don't know if he gets involved. And then we get some sort of faction with Cena, The Rock, and Drew McIntyre. Who knows? But I'll tell you what, KO versus Randy Orton, I'm into that, man. Like, I am really into that, especially with Randy talking about potentially bringing an old move back that we haven't seen in God knows how long, talking about how he wants to punt, you know, Kevin Orton's head off. But now he's like, hey, I want to go up against Kevin Orton, but oh, maybe I'm coming for that championship too. Like, is he getting too distracted by other things because he's going to have his hands full with KO? And the way that KO even came out a couple weeks ago trying to apologize to Randy, saying, hey, look, my bad, didn't mean to do that, I overreacted, everybody else deserved it, you didn't deserve it, Randy rejecting that, like, it hasn't been a long build, and maybe that's why it's even ahead of, you know, as you mentioned, Gunther and Jey Uso for me, but I think number two on my list is KO versus Randy Orton.
Yeah, you think about, and a lot of this that we're talking about is based on promos and hype. That's what we're talking about here. When we think about KO, not just on TV, but also on digital, him just kind of going nuts. Like, I just can't wait to punt his head off his shoulders. Can't wait to get after Kevin Owens. It's very interesting. I think that, I guess, one of the reasons why that we don't have Charlotte and Tiffy on our list in the top three is because Tiffy has been run over and over and over again by Charlotte. It's not even close, man. So that's why I'm like, it seems like it's a seed one versus seed 16 that Charlotte should be able to run right through Tiffany Stratton and win the championship. And maybe it'll go the opposite way, but I know from a promo standpoint, Tiffany needs a lot of work. I mean, WWE didn't do no favors for Tiffany Stratton in that promo battle with Charlotte.
Brian, you don't want to hear this because I know how much you love Tiffy and you want to see Tiffy go over. She can't.
No.
She can't go over. After what we have seen on television, no, she's not. I mean, again, good on her that she got that moment for that championship. But when she stepped up to one of the four horsewomen, the game does not measure up. She's not ready for that.
Like, I was disappointed when Charlotte won because, like, oh, she's definitely going to win. And now the more we see, like, oh, yeah, she's totally going to win. And also, is this them admitting they might have botched the Rumbles? Neither of them are main eventing. Or really going to be anywhere close to the main
event? I don't think so. Like, I've seen the backlash online, and again, online is going to overreact to most things anyway. Like, it's not every year that somebody winning the Rumble ends up. I know it's been that way recently, but I mean, Rock and Cena main evented, you know, WrestleMania, and they planned that literally 365 days in advance, right? Like, there is a history of WrestleMania. Roman versus Undertaker not that long ago main evented WrestleMania. That didn't have a championship involved. That did not have a winner of a Royal Rumble involved. I mean, we had a tag team match, for crying out loud, a couple of years ago, main event night one. Like, just because you win the Rumble doesn't mean you get to main event Mania. You get your championship match, sure. But it doesn't mean that you're going to be main eventing Rumble. I believe... Seth Rollins won the Rumble and he was going up against Brock Lesnar. And because he was going up against Brock, guess where it was? Kicked off the damn show. Like, it couldn't be any further from the main event. It started the damn show. And that was what, 6 years ago? So there's plenty of examples of people winning the Rumble.
I think since we've gone two nights, it's the first time that neither Rumble winner has been in an actual main event.
Sure, but like,
well,
I guess
that's very telling, isn't it? That's very telling. So, because I'll make the case right now. As much as I think it'll be cool to see Rollins, Reigns, and Punk in the ring, I don't know if that's a night one main event. But as I say that, semicolon, I can't put Charlotte and Tiffy in that spot.
Nope.
And with Jey Uso and Gunther, even though that they've gone round and round and round to the point where I can't wait for that match to take place. I mean, I know that the crowd's going to be into it when Jey wins. Is that worthy of night one? Maybe it is over that three-way. Maybe it is.
I mean, it was Rhea and Bianca. Like, that was your night one main event. It was right there for you. It's two faces of the company. You could run with it. And now they've made that convoluted. And no disrespect to EO, but again, with the triple threat, it's like lazy booking where it's like, we're not really going to tell too much of the story here.
But again, like, I feel like you could go – if you went EO versus Rhea –
yes.
Like, that easily could have been night one main event material, too. like, but Bianca is one of your biggest women stars. You're like, oh crap. Well, I guess we got to put her somewhere. Yeah. All right. I guess. So it just, again, and it's that women's triple threat feels a lot like the men's triple threat, where any combination of one-on-one, I could probably get behind. And the triple threat just kind of feels, oh, okay. All right. Yeah. And they put on, like, and the bummer of it is that we got a really good Rhea versus Io match to end Raw, and then Bianca just keeps screwing it up.
Well, I'll tell you what, she can keep screwing it up for me, because that's the hottest ref I've ever seen. Holy shit. And she makes her own outfits, which is great. She just knit one, pearl two. She's just in there in London. Never mind about having a good time. She's in there getting her outfit ready to be a referee on Raw. Oh, pretty good. I'll watch that all night. Boy, she was great.
The big thing, though, like, as we talk about it, and like, I think we all sort of struggle coming up with a third one, like, yes, Hunter deserves credit for where we're at, especially compared to three Manias ago. But outside of the top few matches, like, the builds have sort of sucked. And everyone's like, oh, slow burn, slow burn. We're a few weeks away. Like, we should be excited and invested in the majority of these matches right now, and we're just not.
Well, and so I guess, like, we've got the mid-card titles that need to be added, because as of right now, there are 7 matches for the two nights. So that's basically an entire card, because they typically do around 7 matches night one, 7 matches night two. And I know the ones that they have booked are going to be split, that as we've talked about. But you basically have another entire night that you have to book in the next 16 days. You've got mid-card titles. You've got tag team titles. I don't know what else the rest. I don't know where you're pulling 7 more matches out of here.
Because if you add Naomi and Jade, Drew and Priest, like, you're at 9 now.
Okay, like, so now I still – so then now you need 5? So then you still need 5 more matches.
So I need some Chelsea Green on night 2.
Yeah.
But he's a champion, but there's nothing hot there. Nothing. All she's doing is adding on to her security detail, which sucks. I mean, like Chelsea's entertaining, but, like, she's got to have a dance partner too. Who is that? Meechan again? Well,
yeah, and that's the same thing. It's the same thing with the Women's Intercontinental Championship. Like, Lyra, who's Lyra going to wrestle? I don't know. At least you have a little bit of something around the Intercontinental. Looks like that's going to be a multi-man match as well. Where Finn Balor's trying to get there, but then Liv Morgan's trying to backdoor Mysterio in there as well. There's going to be... There's going to be a multi-man match there. I don't know.
Solo? Is that rushed for Mania? Or is there a multi-man U.S. title match also? Like, it's always just like...
Multi-man U.S. It's going to be multi-man U.S. title.
Okay, you said Solo against who?
Solo Braun in L.A. and maybe... Oh. And Tatu, like a four-way, maybe?
You know what? Honest to God, it's not that hard, WWE. It's not that hard. We're watching the product every week. You can figure this out and get something hot.
Yeah.
The idea that we're doing puzzle pieces this close to WrestleMania is nonsense. Like you just said, Gabe, they're all about the slow burn. But also, you got to be able to have this staircase effect of, hey, we got this all these main events over here, but over here we give you something that's meaningful. All this TV time. It's going to be more than that. It's going to end up just being matches to fill out night 2. Just matches. That's no good. Come on, man. You're better than that.
I mean, the only thing they could, storyline-wise, kind of heat up quickly, but again, it would go against the slow burn. I mean, you could do Solo Fatu. You could do Solo Fatu. That you could heat up enough where you can throw that on. And that's a WrestleMania-worthy match, by the way. Like, that's a WrestleMania-worthy match. It probably doesn't have the build that they would prefer, but that's one of the things they've kind of been hinting at. But again, I'm with you, Brian. I think that they both think that story is going to continue and the breakup's going to have to happen after Mania, after both men find themselves in a U.S. title match.
Yeah, meanwhile, the Wyatt Six is saying, hey, what about us? Hello? We're still here. Hello? No Wyatt Six, huh? Okay.
I bet Karrion Kross ends up on the card, though. Hunter loves him some Karrion Kross.
They don't do pre-show matches, so no.
do we book Chad Gable versus Americano Grande or Grande Americano?
You're confusing your coffee order again.
Do we still do the Andre? Is that still a thing? I don't even remember.
Oh, the Andre Battle Royal. That's right.
Yeah.
I think that's on SmackDown now.
Oh, that's
right. It was last year. It was last year. Yes.
But if anybody needs a Battle Royal, though, it's this one. Get them on the card. My God. All these people, it's been on our TV for 365, and now we get to WrestleMania. We don't have room. Sit in the skybox.
Bayley ends up in a women's tag title match. Sami Zayn isn't going to be on this card.
But at least Sami Zayn hasn't been on television.
Fair.
Right? So at least he's out of sight, out of mind right now. Right. I don't know if he asked for the time off or what. He's selling, obviously. The effects of the match that he had against Kevin Owens. So that all makes sense, at least storyline wise. Before we move on to the three count, now that we're done with the European tour, how did you guys feel about it?
I thought it was an A+ at the top of the card, but not for the majority of the card. Meaning that every time we saw Cena and Cody go back and forth, it was the highlight of those shows. The matches were okay. And I think that always when you have a European crowd, it makes it seem like, oh, my God, this is the greatest Raws and the greatest SmackDown. No, it's the greatest crowds, maybe not the greatest matches.
But, okay, so I guess the crowd wore on me a little bit the way that, and it hasn't been this way in a while, but I would say middle 2010s. Like the crowd, the Raw after WrestleMania crowd was hot. But a lot of times they started going into business for themselves, right? Like they just started chanting whatever they wanted to because they had energy they wanted to. It kind of became too disruptive for promos. Like the European crowds, I think, are great for pay-per-views when it's a lot of matches and they can do their chanting and singing during the matches and it's awesome. But if I have to hear like Cody Rhodes for like five more freaking minutes, so I don't get the promo, like, come on, guys. Like, I know you're excited to see Cody for the seventh time, but, like, can we just get to the actual, like, promo here without you guys just completely taking over and singing to yourselves?
That's right. That's right, Gabe. Let's go back to Dothan, Alabama, so we can hear a bunch of what chances. What? Let's hear what 100
times. Well, look, okay.
You got none of that in the European tour.
I've been over this. Like, I don't know how they organize all the chants and singing and everything they do over there in Europe. I don't know I think it's part of the soccer culture that I'm just not plugged into. And it's wildly impressive that they have a chant or a sing-along for just about every damn wrestler. And they know all the lyrics to every song, which is also really damn impressive. Yeah. But again, like, at one point, they just started chanting CM Punk for no reason, like, and during other matches, they just start yelling for Cody Rhodes, even though it's like a women's match. Like, there are times where they just go into business for themselves, and it kind of detracts from the product as well.
They also lost some creativity points this time. Like, doing the Cody song and the Roman song is exactly the same. Like, freshen it up a little, crowds. Come on. What are we doing?
Of all the things in the business, they're complaining about us as fans. Ah, what a surprise.
I will say, though, and this is 100% a me problem, like, not being off Twitter enough, like the day Raws like tripped me up, where the amount of times like I saw stuff before, took away from it, or it's like, oh yeah, Raw is happening right now. Like, I get the idea it's cool to air it during the day, but for people that have jobs, like, I don't know, took it away a little bit.
I guess that doesn't bother me. The fact that you can air, I love the fact that they can air it live. Mm-hmm. Like that to me is awesome. Cause if you have the opportunity to watch it live, go for it. If not, you can watch it on your own time because it's on Netflix and available on demand, which is fantastic. All right. We've got a lot of things to get to. Here we have the three count, the top three stories in the world of professional wrestling. Brian, what do we got at number one this week?
Well, we had an opportunity to chat with one of the future stars of professional wrestling. Gabe and I chatted with the one and only Kyle Fletcher, friend of the show. This is our talk with Kyle from earlier in the week.
Always excited to bring in guests here on GKW and excited to talk to our next one as well. AEW star Kyle Fletcher. You can catch him live and in person, Peoria, Illinois. Make sure you check them out in Peoria tomorrow night. Dynamite as we get closer and closer to Dynasty. AEWTix.com. Kyle, thank you so much for jumping on, man.
No, thank you guys for having me. It's a pleasure to be back.
Okay, I got to ask this. I feel like I have to start with this.
Oh, boy.
Because it was, as somebody who, I mean, the reason why I'm wearing the hat, I'm not going to lie, my hair get a little thin up top here, Kyle. So it pained me to see someone who had a beautiful head of hair like yourself shave it on national television live for everyone to see. How difficult of a decision was it to shave the head and go with the buzz cut that you're currently rocking right now?
Yeah, man. It really, surprisingly, it wasn't too hard at all. It was something that I had thought about for a little while. It was something that I had considered doing myself, and I thought it would fit pretty well with the story, so I offered it as a suggestion. Everyone seemed to go, I mean, if you want to share it, we're not going to stop you. And I went, oh, okay, sure, let's do it then. And I think it was just, it's just even more of a dickhead move, the fact that I had a beautiful head of hair beforehand. So all you bald people, there you go.
You know, Kyle, you are officially a friend of the show. It's the third time we've had you on. We had you on early of last year. Mm-hmm. When you step back and look at just your last 6 months in pro wrestling, what's it mean to you to look back at what you've been able to pull off?
Yeah, it's a real funny one for me. And I feel like I get asked this question a fair bit. But for me, it doesn't feel like, whilst the past 6 months, the past year have been crazy, right? Like, so much has gone on. I've been the one that's there for like every single little tiny step of it, right? So to me, it doesn't feel like it's out of nowhere. It doesn't feel like it's this like brand new thing, because for me, it's been a decade. It's been years and years and years of this hard work trying to get to this point. More than anything, looking back at the past 6 months, it just feels rewarding. It feels like it's everything's paying off. All that, all the sacrifices that I made moving countries multiple times. Like, yeah, I'm exactly where I have always been supposed to be. You know what I mean?
Well, now that you get to hang out with Don Callis as well, like, Don's been, I mean, he's been here, there, everywhere. He has done so much within professional wrestling. What do you think you've learned the most from Don?
Wow, that's actually a really good question. Don has been one of my biggest supporters as of late, over the past year or so since joining the family. It's hard to pinpoint it on one thing. I will say probably the biggest impact he's had is on me being a bad guy. I've never been committed to this kind of role before in such a position. And every week it feels like he's coming to me with like something that he's seen or something that he remembers that he saw back in the day. And he's like, oh, do you think you could do something with this? Do you think you could do something with this? So I think that's probably where he's come in clutch the most.
You know, part of that family, you and Takeshita, he's one of those guys, you see stuff pop up once in a while about his past and you're like, that can't be true. It's like, oh no, that actually is true. He started at this age.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, somehow, some way, it's all true. All of his resumes.
Crazy.
What is it like working alongside a guy like Takeshita?
Oh man, my husband Takeshita, what can I say about him? He's beautiful for one.
Mm-hmm.
Real nice cock on him too. I mean, I'm kidding.
Okay.
He is apart from myself, I think the person that I enjoy watching in the ring the most. I think he just has that style that is so it's obviously influenced by Japanese wrestling. I love Japanese wrestling, but it's that like that sports aspect, that sports presentation. When he throws a forearm, I think he's killed someone, you know what I mean? And I think that is a lot of what is missing in today's wrestling, is something that I try and capture myself. But when I watch Takeshita, I'm just like sitting there going, He's killing some people. Jesus. Wow. Yeah.
and now you're fresh off this trilogy, obviously, the cage match. I mean, at 26 years old and being so, again, still so young, especially compared to, you take a look around professional wrestling, I don't think there's a lot of young guys like yourself. What's it like to reach this kind of fight forever thing you already have going on with Will Ospreay at such a young age? Because I feel like usually you get that as you know, those rivalries grow, but here we are, and it kind of feels like you guys are there already.
Yeah, I think it's really, really cool. It's my first opportunity in probably all of wrestling where I've been able to delve into a story and delve into like how to tell this story the best way. And I think it's really rewarding that people are saying stuff like that. They're saying that like, oh, they're wrestling soulmates. They could fight for 10 years and I'd still be into it. You know what I mean? So I think the fact that we've hit that, it's rewarding, but then also at the same time in the back of my head, I now know that at any point over the next decade, 2 decades, 3 decades, because we're both, Will's only 32 as well. So like we have decades left in this shit, hopefully, touch wood. We could revisit this rivalry every year, once a year, twice a year, like, and as soon as that match gets announced, as soon as we are seen in the ring together, there's going to be an anticipation purely based off the stuff that we've already done. So I think that's the coolest part. I just know now that, hey, if we're ever struggling for ideas, chuck me and I'll spray in the ring. We'll make some magic.
Who are some guys or girls from your time as a wrestling fan that are in that boat where you say, hey, I can watch them wrestle. Doesn't matter what time or day it is.
I think when I was growing up, it was like Cena and Orton was probably the big one. I know a lot of people like to like look back at their matches and be like, oh, it was whatever. But like at the time, any time they were in the ring together, I was glued to my seat. I was like, oh, these dudes are going to kill each other. It's going to be sick. And then, yeah, I mean, further on, you get like Cena and Styles. Like there's a lot of different ones over the years. But yeah, I think Cena one's probably the one that when I was a fan was the one that I was like, this is so cool.
When you look around professional wrestling, there's such an international flavor to it. Why do you think there's been, I mean, again, with yourself included in this, like, why do you think there's been so many international stars that have come to professional wrestling over the last decade?
So speaking from my experience, being from a country like Australia that is in such a bubble, there is this underlying like determination from these people, these trainees, these wrestlers, that it's like, if you're born in America, you almost have a step up already. You're almost there. All you got to do is like, you don't got to travel. It's like in your backyard almost, these massive wrestling companies where there's like job opportunities everywhere. For someone like me in Australia, if I wanted to work, there was maybe one promotion close to me that drew 50 people a show once a month. And then if I wanted to do anything else, I had to drive 10 hours just to wrestle in front of 100 people. I think there's this underlying determination with international wrestlers that it's like, if I had the opportunities that American wrestlers had, I would blow them out of the water in a heartbeat. So when you have a bunch of people like that, that are pushing each other to get better, that know when that opportunity arises, they're going to over deliver, that's essentially what they do. They finally get given this opportunity. They finally get seen for the first time by international eyes and people go like, where has this motherfucker been? You know what I mean? Like, so I think that's kind of what it is. I think it's the same for people from Europe, same people from Canada. It's when they finally get that big opportunity, that breakthrough moment, they are so ready for it that they're just ready to absolutely kill it.
You got to wrestle in Australia this year, sharing a ring with Takeshita, Kenny Omega, Will Ospreay. Yeah. What was that experience like? How many friends and family did you have in attendance for that one?
I probably had hundreds of friends / family in the audience. Yeah, it was really surreal, man. Going back and like thinking about 10-year-old me, 14-year-old me when I got into wrestling, like I did not think something like that was possible. I seriously did not think it was possible. So it's hard to take myself out of the moment when I'm in the ring, but looking back in hindsight, I look at it and I go like, if you had told me even a year, 2 years ago that I would be in this situation, wrestling in front of over 10,000 people in my home country, in the ring with three of the best professional wrestlers of all time, and my name doesn't even look out of place next to that, that is, I would have screamed. I would have not known what to do with myself. So like, yes, it didn't feel crazy in the moment just because I was there, I had a job to do. But being able to look back on it in hindsight, it was very, very special and something that I will hold dear, I'm sure, forever.
You mentioned the ability that you and Will had to tell a story in your rivalry that you just wrapped up. Who are other so what are some other stories you want to tell going forward?
Ooh, that is an interesting one. I think the fun part is for me, there is so much in AEW that I haven't even scratched the surface of. There's a lot of people that I have been in the ring with, yes, but like with Ospreay, that was my first chance to tell a story. So there is 100 other people on the roster that I, given a 3-month story with, I'm sure I could make magic with. It all depends on the person. I think I will take any opportunity thrown my way and I will do my best to make it awesome. And I'm sure I'm now at the point where I believe in my ability enough that I could make something awesome with anybody. It's all about finding that real emotion for me. With Ospreay, it was easy. We have so much backstory. It's finding that like little piece of realism and then building on that. So I think, whoever I get put in the ring with, it's just finding that realism, that real emotion, and then trying to portray that to the fans as well, get them to feel it.
As a competitor, how exciting is it to see that locker room continue to grow, to continue to add talent? You know, Speedball Mike Bailey just a couple weeks ago. How exciting is that for you as a competitor?
Dude, it's really cool because it keeps it fresh for me. Looking at a Speedball Mike Bailey coming in, and then obviously there's rumors flying around all the time about who could be getting brought in, the free agents that have just hit the market, and every single time it's like that creativity just like sparks, and I'm sitting there for like 5 minutes after I read a tweet and I'm like, all right, what could I do with Speedball Mike Bailey? And then I think about it and I'm like, oh my god, this is gonna be so cool. And then maybe I forget about it for 6 months, whatever it is, but then 6 months down the line I get put in the ring with Speedball and I go like, oh my god, I've been waiting for this, I'm so excited. And then we just go out there and have the greatest match of all time. So like, yeah, it's very, very exciting to say the least.
Could you ever wrestle barefoot like he does?
I could not. I personally, even when I saw him wrestling on the indies, I remember asking him, I was like, are you not scared about your toes or like stepping on a nail or like getting a splinter? And he's like, no, I didn't martial arts and blah, 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 blah. But I know me, like the first thing I would do, I'd go to like walk down the ramp and I would stub a toe and then I have to wrestle a toe with a broken toe, wrestle a match with a broken toe, and then I'd just be sad the whole time, and then my feet would be dirty, I'd have to wash them in the shower. It's a whole thing. I'm not for me.
You talked about Takeshita, your other relationship, Sky Blue. We've seen you on social media being Nurse Fletcher. How's that been for you as you get her ready to come back to the ring?
Yeah, it's I was gonna say I don't even think it was challenging. It was in certain ways, I think more so the emotional and mental side of things. I've never, touch wood, experienced a major injury through wrestling. So this was my first kind of first-hand experience of what that kind of entails. And it was hard for me, like seeing her go through it. And then also at the same time, my career is taking off and like going crazy. And then usually Sky would be there for everything, being able to support me, being able to share it with me. And it was very, I think, hard for her to be happy for me, but then also at the same time be like, this sucks. Like, I want to be there. I want to be a part of it. I want to be doing the same thing. So definitely challenging, but also rewarding in other ways, because as she got better, as she started going through a rehab process and she was able to get back in the gym, I was able to be there for her and help her through all that kind of stuff. And I think that was very rewarding for me. So yes, Nurse Fletcher did good. It's now Dr. Fletcher getting it ready for the ring. And yeah, it should be coming sooner than we think.
Well, I got to imagine it's pretty exciting for her just based on the state of the AEW women's division, the way it's been showcased, the way it just continues to grow and the stories that are being told over there. I got to imagine she's chomping at the bit to be a part of some of this.
You have no idea. She is like a, what's the word? When something's cooped up for too long and it's just ready to bust out. And it's like, that's pretty much her right now.
You know, like we talked about this past year, you become the proto star. In doing some research, true or false, your first wrestling name was Instagram?
So, correction.
Okay.
Oh.
It was Instagram. Graham. So like Instagram, but the name Graham.
Gotcha. And whose idea was this? Where did this come from?
This was my first trainer's idea. At the time, hipsters were very in. The term hipster was a big thing. And in Australia especially, it was a big social thing at the time. So he had this idea. We were like, if you remember Chikara had a lot of like wacky characters under masks and stuff. And he kind of thought that was the route that he wanted to go. He kind of wanted to do these wacky mask characters. So he gave me the gimmick of Instagram the hipster luchador. Wow. My mask had glasses on it. My mask had a beanie on it. It had a fake beard on it because I was 14 at the time. Obviously, I didn't grow a beard. I still can't. But yeah, that was it. That was where it came from.
So what you're telling me is we should be waiting for Instagram versus hologram. Like that's going to be the next big one, right? Like that's.
Please don't put that in. Don't put that in Tony Khan's head. Please no. Cut that.
All right, we can cut. I mean, again, I thought we could just spitballing here. As AEW really feels like it's starting to build some momentum here as we get closer to Dynasty, obviously All In and Texas as well. What do you credit that momentum that the company feels like it has right now?
I think there's a lot of different things, but mainly I think it comes down to the fact that everyone backstage loves this place. Everyone backstage now, everyone is happy to be there. Everyone is chomping at the bit to get out that curtain and absolutely just go out and crush it. Every person that I've wrestled, every person that I've interacted with has just been like, I want to do the absolute best we can. I want to go crazy. I want to be awesome. And then like, I think there's enough of those people that energy becomes infectious. And I think it's being in the locker room. And as soon as people come back from their matches, it's like, yeah, that was fucking sick. That was awesome. You did great. And then it's like, if everyone's doing that for everyone, everyone wants to be at work. Everyone wants to be that guy coming back and getting slaps on the back when they come back. So I think that is what is going on. I think everyone loves this place, wants to succeed, and they're going to do everything they can and bust their own ass to get the company to where it should be.
Kyle, I want to say thank you so much, man. Again, people, go check him out Wednesday in Peoria, AEW Dynamite, AEWTix.com. We always appreciate the time and can't wait to see what you're going to do next over the next couple of months, man.
I think it is very exciting because I have no idea whatsoever. And I am excited for it to unfold personally. I am excited for it to unfold for everybody else and to take you on a journey.
Enjoyed our conversation earlier this week from, it was just a great conversation. A lot of different things to dive into. What was your overall reaction after we talked to Kyle Fletcher?
I think just how open and honest he is, and the fact that he's still so damn young. And like we've seen the way he's grown this past year, that's a star right there.
That story is more important than anything else, guys.
Yeah.
The story, because he talks about, you guys asked about, you know, delving into stories and being, having Will Ospreay as a dance partner. I think just like some of the other guests that we talked to on GKW, and it's not about championships. It's not even about being on top of the card. It's just TV time and having stories. I just think Roman, that even though he was on top as a champion, even when he wasn't of that, and so many of us that we talked to, they just want a meaningful story.
Yep.
All right, Brian, what do we got this week? Number two.
Sticking with AEW, last night we saw the bracket for the Owen Hart tournament this year. On the men's side, Will Ospreay takes on Kevin Knight. Brody King takes on Takeshita. The other side of the bracket sees Mark Briscoe, first friend of the show, Kyle Fletcher, and Hangman Adam Page versus a wild card. On the women's side, Jamie Hayter versus Billy Starks. Thunder Rosa versus Chris Statlander. The other side of that bracket, Julia Hart versus Mercedes Moné and Harley Cameron versus Athena. Get the pencils out. Fantasy book, the Owen.
So it is, I think it's worth keeping in mind, whoever wins the Owen gets a title opportunity. He's going to get a title shot at All In. So that I think that previously, again, I think about the first time when they, you know, it ended up being... you had Adam Cole winning the men's side. He's not getting a championship opportunity, but he got to have, you know, share share the moment with his then girlfriend Britt Baker, right? Like she wins, and they tell the story kind of that way. The championship thing to me adds an interesting wrinkle because I think you can automatically start crossing off some names that aren't going to be having championship matches at the biggest show of the year for AEW. So on the men's side, first of all, I am rooting for the wild card to be the best wrestler alive in Max Caster. I think just be funny. And again, it's not going to be a big return from anyone, right? It's because if it was going to be a big return, they'd put it on the pay-per-view. It's not. This is going to be on a Dynamite or a Collision. So Hangman just gets to squash Max Caster. Again, that's my guess. I have no idea if that's actually going to come to fruition. But all signs point to me for Will Ospreay facing off against Hangman Adam Page in the finals.
And I like Hangman Page to win the men's side of the Owen. I think that's deserved. And does that mean that he takes on Moxley for the world championship? Does that mean it's Swerve and Hangman for the world championship? I don't know. But if anybody deserves to be in that title picture, it's him. Listen, mm-hmm. we talk about story, right? He's been involved a while without having a championship and burning someone's house down and going from heel to babyface. And so here's a guy here is deserving of that spot. So on the men's side, I'm going with Hangman Page.
That's interesting. So I agree with both of you. I think it's Ospreay and Hangman in the end. I think we end up Ospreay versus Mox in Dallas, and Ospreay is the one that saves the company and the face of the franchise in that regard.
Why can't that be Hangman, though? Hangman's been there since day one. He's been telling more meaningful stories. He's been closer to that title. I think it's Hangman, man. Plus, we all know Ospreay doesn't care if he wins or loses. Like he went to the Bryan Danielson School of Booking.
But is there a point where Ospreay has to win one of these big matches?
No.
Okay.
I mean, eventually, yeah. But like, how long did we do that with Bryan Danielson, right? Like, oh, eventually he's going to have to win. Well, I guess he didn't win this one. Well, eventually he's got to win. Well, he didn't win. And until he actually, at the very end of his career at AEW, like, he finally did win and go over and have the championship that eventually Moxley took from him. But like, Will Ospreay's a big enough star where I don't think you need to have him win one of these big matches. Because again, it becomes a part of the story. Can he actually get over? It's a super easy thing to fold into anytime he gets toward the top of the card.
So with that logic, is there, because like the way we talk about it, it's Hangman or it's Ospreay. Like those are the only two that are legit options that could ultimately then go to All In and challenge for a title. Is there a way where they throw a curveball and say, hey, let's just get a different finals? If it's going to be Hangman, could it be Hangman Takeshita in the finals? Could they go that route knowing that it's going to be Hangman that wins it ultimately?
Well, I mean, if you're going to go that route, like, give the rub to Brody King.
Well, yes. Brody versus Archer. Talk about battle of, you know, someone's going to win last night. How about that one?
Yeah. Really enjoyed that match.
Bro.
Really enjoyed that match a big time. And it's not because it's just big, you know, big guys slapping meat. It's
meaty meat slapping meat.
Yeah, you got that down. I just enjoy both of these guys in the ring. I do. I'll just tell you this, like, you know, I understand what you're saying, Brian, about Ospreay, but don't you think that if he does win the championship, it should be in front of a bigger crowd than what you're going to get in Texas? Shouldn't it be in the UK, the coronation of the championship in his hometown, his home country, in front of 30,000, 40,000, 80,000 people? Shouldn't it be that?
But where are they going to get another crowd like that in the UK? They don't have any plans to go back for a big show anytime soon. Yeah.
Oh, that can – I mean, maybe this happens in 2025. Maybe it happens in 2026. I think that you can build up to that, though. The coronation of, like, the new AEW with him being a champion. But it happened there. Are you guys in Texas.
Are you ruling out that it's Hangman Swerve?
I am not. Well, I am.
Could be.
I am. Nah, I am.
Though, Gabe.
I am. Like, after I saw the way everything ended last night, I'm like, oh, there's no way Swerve's going over.
Yeah.
So the little comment in the hallways of Peoria was like, I know. And then right? It made you think like, okay, so now they're on the same page now. Now they
can't have this blood feud for the championship continue at All In. The blood feud is settled.
It's so funny. Time. It's so funny you say that because as we saw that eye-to-eye contact, and Hangman didn't know what to do, so he just walked away.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, well, I guess this is over now. That's his apology. That Swerve's apology to Hangman, just like, oh, my God. There's so much money in that match still. But then, now we're talking about two baby faces if they ran that right. back. I don't know. I don't know. I just, you know, it's something that was weird, by the way. I don't know if we talked about this last week or not. Did you notice that Swerve was talking about the Dynasty era of AEW? I'm like, what era? This is a new pay-per-view. Like, he feels like I won last time at Dynasty, so I'm going to win this time at Dynasty too.
Yeah.
Odd.
Yeah, yeah. It's not one of like their original four. Yeah, it's
okay. The Dynasty era, as if saying like, this is my pay-per-view, so I'm going to win over Moxley. And it's just like, there's so many moving parts. I'm not sure if that's going to be the case coming up in this weekend.
Well, I mean, he's you got to have, unless he's able to assemble an army out of nowhere, much like with Cody Rhodes going over Roman Reigns, you need to have an army of people ready to help you out. And it doesn't seem like that is the case right now for Swerve Strickland, especially because he had his own guy. Prince Nana walked out on him last night.
Yes. As Moxley grabs Willow Nightingale, for whatever reason, Nana left the ring. You saw that? He dipped out afterwards. I'm like, what are you doing? So, yeah, there could be a change there. I could see that happening. We've been looking at this for a while, long time. Yeah.
What about the women's side? So if we all think Ospreay Hangman in the finals, what about the women?
So why? Tell me why it's not Athena. Talk me out of it.
Because she's not going to beat Mercedes.
Yeah, so tell me why those two are not on opposite sides of the bracket.
Yeah, I mean, so there's one clear winner here, and it's Jamie Hayter.
I wish. I'm a big fan. I hope it is.
No, she's honestly, yeah. Like, I'm looking at this and it's like, okay, well, Mercedes goes over Julia Hart. Athena goes over Harley Cameron, which is a bummer, but, you know, it's got to happen. And then you've got Athena versus Mercedes. Mercedes beats Athena. Athena screws over Mercedes at Double or Nothing to kick off that feud in earnest. And then you have Jamie Hayter walk away as the number one contender.
If Athena beats Mercedes, it's not for all four or five of her championships. It's just for that match. So now we're going to run it back with a rematch at some point, you think, for all of her championships, correct?
I think there's a story there because then you can have Athena beat, what's her face, Toni Storm. Athena's now got a belt. You run it back for Mercedes. Like, hey, I want that one. And you can run back Athena and Mercedes.
Well, I mean, she's already said, hey, I want that one, which is why she's in the tournament to begin with.
I just think that Mercedes against Athena, there's money in that. If you want to have it the first time, it doesn't hurt Mercedes that she loses against Athena, but the money is them going to have their rematch, wherever that's going to be. Can you stretch that all the way out to Dallas? I don't know.
I can't imagine Athena in her second ever AEW televised, because again, she's been like locked away, literally locked away behind the paywall that only Jay Hood has of, you know, Honor Club. Like, he's the only one who actually gets to see one of the greatest women's champions we have today. Like, she's not going to win. I don't think she's going to win this tournament. They're going to finally let her out. She's going to lose. Like, that's the way they do this in AEW. They bring these people out only to lose all the time.
I hope. Go ahead, Brian.
That's a pay-per-view match, this first. Like, I don't understand why it's not Mercedes versus Athena at the pay-per-view. At Double or Nothing, because that's where the finals are going to take place. Those two could do it there. I'm just baffled by that part. To your point about Jamie Hayter, why not Statlander?
I'm just not a fan because I don't know what that is anymore. I've not known who Chris Statlander has been since she came on the scene, booping people on the nose. I don't know what that is. Like, so is she supposed to be like this era's China? What is she supposed to be? I don't understand. Like again, it's a disconnect. There's several people that we talk about on a regular basis. Well, you don't know who they are. We just talked about what is it, Valkyria?
Lyra.
Like, what is that? Besides the entrance, what is that? You have to define who these people are. Statlander is strong, and she's had some really solid matches with Mercedes. But then what? Like, you're just a wrestler? If that's it? Because outside the ruffled shirt or that she's strong, I don't know what she's supposed to be.
Well, and she hasn't been on TV a ton.
Yeah.
As of late, you know, I think that's the reason why I eliminate her, because she's just kind of been out of sight, out of mind. And she's kind of been direction. The problem I had, because I feel like Chris had something going. She had left the alien gimmick behind. She had something going with the best friends, hanging around Orange Cassidy. They're starting to build something, but then she kind of turned heel, but now she's back to babyface. Like, they just haven't had any sort of good push for her outside of, as Hood said, good matches.
It's been a mess after the Stokely thing, where she just went from heel to babyface and not just, it's like you said, Gabe, there's no direction. So, like, I rule her out because her creative is not hot enough for her to win the Owen.
Yeah. Like, honestly, the one side of the bracket, I'm more interested when Julia Hart, Mercedes Moné, Harley Cameron, and Athena than really the other side of the bracket at all. Like, yeah. Those four, as much as Harley Cameron, we've talked about how Harley's great, been a great on television. Julia, I'm just a big fan of. Mercedes, obviously. Now Athena getting more television time. Like, I think that side of the bracket is just infinitely more fascinating than the other side, where Jamie Hayter's really the only one who's consistently been on TV. Thunder Rosa's popped up from time to time as of late. But yeah, that side of the bracket, I wish Harley Cameron had a different opening round opponent than Athena. I wish she could get a win in the tournament, but she's not beating Athena.
No.
What about the puppet? Is the puppet beating Athena? What do you think?
I mean, the puppet was fantastic. That whole segment was fantastic. Yeah. The puppet coming out of nowhere. Yeah, they're teaming together on Collision. The name that Harley Cameron came up with. Mercedes Moné saying no the way Australians say it with an R. The whole thing was fantastic. Like, the whole thing was an A-plus for me.
Oh, man. Yeah, I just, I don't know, man. There's still about 35 or 40 wrestlers in the back that's still not getting an opportunity. So the wild card is going to be what? Wardlow? Who's going to come out there?
Max Caster.
Oh, my God.
Wardlow still work there?
He's injured. I believe he was backstage at the pay-per-view a couple weeks ago.
Well, you know what? He said you're joking about Max Caster, but people were trying to do that chant 2 weeks ago. I don't know if you saw that. When he was in the back, did you notice that?
People I did notice like, that. Let's go, Max. You're the best wrestler alive. Let's go, Max. You're the best wrestler alive. It's going to be Max Caster. I'm on board. I'm on board with the best wrestler alive. You guys, I'm just an early adapter. You guys will jump on eventually.
Yeah, that's a brother that's lost his rhythm. He's lost his rhythm. I don't know what happened. He was a great rapper, and all of a sudden now he's doing that. He's just stripped it away. And by the way, anyone seen Jannetty Bowens lately?
No.
No, have not. No, him and Daddy Ass have just disappeared off the face of the earth.
Wow.
What do we got at number three this week, Brian?
All right, was announced WrestleMania Hall of Fame. It'll take place WrestleMania weekend. We found out Bret Hart for Stone Cold Steve Austin will be the first match inducted into the Hall of Fame. Which Mania match should have been the first inducted into the Hall?
I mean, in terms of a moment, and I feel the way, and again, this was, I guess, the older WWE when somebody else was in charge. But when you, even though I was not alive, or maybe I might have been, but I certainly wasn't watching to remember the moment. But Andre versus Hulk, like, had to be the first match to go in, right? Like, the way that that had been pushed for years and years and years of, like, being the biggest thing ever in WrestleMania when Hulk Hogan body slammed Andre the Giant and the way that that whole thing was built up. Like, is it the greatest match of all time? No, but, I mean, and as good as Stone Cold and Bret Hart was, like, that's not, like, the best match in WrestleMania history either. It's certainly a seminal moment. It's certainly a fantastic moment. But, like, when I think of, like, WrestleMania, I probably first think, and again, maybe because it was just thrown into my mind by Vince over the years, Andre versus Hulk seems like it should have been the first.
I'm going to guess, and I haven't talked to anybody, but I'm just going to guess that they just wanted competitors to be a first one alive.
That's fair.
And so that's fair. I think that's a choice, just like Rock and Hogan in Toronto is a choice. Just like Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels for Ric Flair's retirement match is a choice. Edge and Christian, Dudley's and the Hardys at some point, that's going to be a choice. So I just think that they just want to have the feel good of, hey, here's two people that can talk about their match at the podium and for the Hall of Fame, because all the rest of these, like, we would love to see Razor Ramon and Shawn. Razor isn't around. Yeah. You know, so I think some of this, some of the great Mania moments, you know, Savage Steamboat, I'd love for them to talk about it. Savage has passed away, and even Lanny's passed away. So I think they just want the feel good of two people at the podium first before they delve into this.
I think that I haven't thought about it from that side. I tend to agree. I think also the Hogan part plays into it, and the reaction we saw on Raw and Netflix, we're like, maybe we don't need to push Hulk out there as much as we do, because I agree the first thought was Hogan Andre. But if we're going for like two guys that are live, like why not Bret and Shawn? Why not Austin and Rock?
Coming. Coming. I mean, like you know, year after year, coming. While these guys are still alive, give them their flowers. I think that's give them their flowers award is what it is. While they're still alive.
Well, and you can do that because, like, obviously, like, HBK Taker would fit into that as well, but I'm sure we'll hear, I guess, we don't, maybe I missed it. Like, they haven't announced who's inducting Triple H, right?
No.
I just assumed it was going to be Shawn, but maybe yeah. I'm wrong. And so then you're already hearing from Shawn, so, like, Shawn Taker doesn't make sense, right? Like, whereas I think from that standpoint, I can make that make sense from everything Jay Hood said, you know, of again, because it's not an actual Hall of Fame, right? Like, it's not an actual, this. It's just for the event. And yes, if you're a Hall of Famer, you get your WWE Hall of Fame ring. But from the actual event, it makes sense to have two guys who are alive, two guys that are going to get a great reaction. Both are going to be there. Yeah. And you're going to get to hear from them instead of hearing, you know, turning it into the HBK show of talking about Hunter and then talking about The Undertaker.
Hood, how many people?
You can roll Shawn Michaels out there.
I would say, how many people from the Gimmick Battle Royal are still with us? Can we roll that out there? That's 17?
Heenan, no. Fuji, no. Sheik, no.
No.
Michael Hayes.
All right.
He's still out there.
Let me think of that.
Gobbledygooker. Big Hector alive. Yes. So he's still there. I would just say that that's what – and by the way, you go even deeper with this. I mean, you can – again, Flair Steamboat was some of the best wrestling I saw as a kid. They had that trilogy mm-hmm. in 89, and Rick Steamboat's still alive. Midnight Express against Rock and Roll Express. All four – well, you know, no Bobby Enid, but you got a Stan Lane, and you've got Dennis Condrey that can speak about their feud with the Rock and Roll Express and Jim Cornette. So you can keep going, but it's sad that – if you bring out some of the matches that we all like, half that match is not around to talk about it. That's the sad part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, yeah, because again, if you want to do Hardys, Dudleys, Edge and Christian, well, they're working for the other company. You already burned that bridge. Like Sting's not going to be there to induct Lex Luger. So like, yeah, it's, the ones that I wrote down that could potentially be it, like in terms of best match of all time, yeah, you're missing. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense when you start looking through that lens why Austin and Bret Hart would be the first one.
I wish Macho Man Randy Savage was still alive, guys, because he'd be out of the business, but he'd still come back and do Slim Jim and still be around the conventions and stuff, but him talking about his matchup against Ricky Steamboat at WrestleMania 3 and his matchup against Hogan and matchup against Flair. I mean, I just think that'd be awesome. He was such a great character.
What do we have this week for news notes?
All right. Sticking with WrestleMania, announced this week a new Peacock doc coming out April 11th. WrestleMania 9 becoming a spectacle. Those include behind-the-scenes footage from the 1993 event.
I think we've already covered this. Why? Mm. Why? Why 9? Like, again, other than Vegas, like...
another reason. Togas? Right.
I think that's it. I think it's because it's in Vegas and... I thought I saw all of the footage from behind the scenes of all the animals and Vince talking to Shawn and where Vince told Shawn to stand for the fireworks. I think all of us have seen this, right? I don't know why I need to see that unless it's something pretty good. I'll watch. I just don't know. I mean, because that Mania kind of sucked. That's why. Right. I have a bit of
Well, especially the ending, like just to bring out Hulk to beat Yokozuna in a squash match. Okay, I guess.
Yeah. Yes, because Hogan did want to take on Brett. That's the reason why they did that, is because Hogan was afraid of Brett, because he know that Brett would have tied him in a fucking pretzel. That's why.
And I'm sure everything Hogan says in this will be 100% the truth. So, you know, we'll have that to bank on also.
That's another thing, too. Yeah, it's just him. Okay.
Well, speaking of Bret Hart, he went on the Ariel Helwani show this week, was asked if he watches the current products, and quote, "I find the wrestlers are more actors pretending to be wrestlers today than actual wrestlers." He said it's mainly in AEW where he sees this. Guys like Roman Reigns is someone that earns the respect of Bret's generation.
Like, you know, because was it earlier in the interview he talked about, like, how guys imitated him and they, you've seen all these different... Where do you think that started, Brett? Like, all of the, like, is when Punk was over in AEW, and you see it all the time with FTR. Like, come on, man. Like, this just reeks of, if you've been paying attention to anything happening in the NBA, like, Stephen A. Smith was on First Take the other day telling, you know, Hall of Famers told him that, oh, yeah, Stephen Curry wouldn't score 17 points per game in our day. Like, okay, cool. Cool guy. Awesome. Let's just move on. It's just the past generation not wanting to give the new generation credit. And Brett went through this. Like, the old generation didn't want to give him credit back in his day. And now he's doing the same shit. It's rinse and repeat.
You know what's funny? You know what's funny? Is that Brett says this, some of the 90s being the best decade. You know why? Because he was champion. He was over.
He wrestled.
Because he was over. So, of course, it's the best. You know, the best era is for us here at Good Karma Brands, this era, because we're over. We got shows. We got management. We got two boarding shows on here. We got play-by-play guys. We got so of course, this is our era. Of course, we think it's the best. Is it the 90s or 2000s? No, right now is the best that we're – this is our era. Of course, it's the best. So same thing with Brett. Brett says that because he was the champion. So – it's funny he picked out Roman Reigns because he thinks that Roman is like the guy that is like the most realistic. And it's kind of like, yes and no. I don't know if I 100% agree with that, but I just love Brett putting himself over in a 2-minute clip I saw on Twitter.
Like, and Brett was a workhorse, like to put, like, yeah. Roman wrestles like 6 times a year, man.
Yeah, it's funny he said that.
He said he likes guys that are rugged, like himself and like Kurt Hennig was. That was one of the names he threw out there. So,
I remember all those death matches that Kurt Hennig had in his career. It's like, I was like, really? He was just like a wrestler's wrestler. Rough, competitive, yes. Athletic, yes. Rough. I don't think so.
The free agency news reports out this week that Miro has been re-signed with the WWE. He was released by the WWE in April of 2020. We last saw him in AEW December of 2023.
What time is he coming on, Brian?
He's trying to get his connection set up.
I don't understand all these AEW guys going to WWE. Like, you got, like, Malakai got lost in the shuffle. He's going back. Miro, you got lost in the shuffle. You're going back. Like, guess what's going to happen here, bud? You're going to get lost in the shuffle again. Like, yeah, you'll be the shiny new toy for a month, and then you're going to kind of just fade to the back. I just don't
see Andrade, and they might not because they're not watching Speed every week, but, like, that's
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
And finally, in news, and now it's AEW All In Weekend taking over Arlington July 9th through the 12th. Dynamite, Collision, Ring of Honor, Death Before Dishonor, and All In all taking place in Arlington. StarCast takes place Friday and Saturday, and All In on Saturday, 3 o'clock Eastern start time.
I did notice that. That was the most interesting part because there is a Saturday night's main events that is scheduled for later that night. Look, good self-awareness. Right? Like, good self-awareness. Like, hey, maybe people are going to want to watch that. Let's not even have to deal or worry about what's going on over in WWE. Let's do our thing. We'll still put on a great show. Who cares if it's at 2 o'clock? I don't have a problem with them going on that early. I think that's just smart. That's just trying to make yourself the most money, realizing that you can have that. It's not like there's anything else going on that afternoon, right? So just have the afternoon to yourself and don't have to worry about somebody going, oh, should I watch the free one on NBC or should I pay for this? If you want to pay for it, you can watch it, not worry about it.
They're even getting smart with the stuff like Collision in a couple of weeks, not going to be on Saturday going against WrestleMania. Like they moved it to Thursday and said, hey, like, why don't you do that? It's very important that they have this self-awareness.
Well, and especially because they had some of the success they did by splitting Collision into 2 one-hour shows to follow March Madness. Like they had success with that. So I think that just kind of shows that, especially if it's not necessarily Dynamite, like you can have a little bit of flexibility with some of the other shows and still be fine.
Yeah, but good on them.
What did you have for your matches of the week?
We joked about it because someone had to win, but I really enjoyed Brody versus Lance Archer last night.
I did. Yeah. I did too. Meaty men slapping meat. Fantastic. Yeah. Just absolutely fantastic match.
Those guys don't win enough. I'm glad they finally did. I hated the ending, but from Raw, I enjoyed EO versus Rhea up until the ending. I thought that was fun, those two going out
there. Oh, it was such a good match. It was that was on my list too. Like, such a good match.
And then also from Raw, I enjoyed New Day versus New Cash Republic. Like, I think they've completely botched the New Day heel turn, but I thought that match was really well done on Monday.
I will throw the opener out there. I guess I was pleasantly surprised with the way that they were able to, you know, throw out that and make it probably one of the more entertaining Jon Moxley matches in a while. I thought that, you know, the mixed tornado tag, you know, it was ended up being a rough bump for Willow going through the table as, you know, they struggled a little bit with the power bomb, but they still executed it. I thought the end of the match was fun. I thought the whole thing was just fun. I thought they executed it pretty well. Again, if you want to nitpick, but I thought the tornado tag mixed tag match to start last night was really good.
Okay, guys, I'm back.
Hey,
I cannot wait until we move out of this studio. And that's a shoot, brother. that's out there now. So I would agree with you, Gabe, that I really like the mixed tag. And boy, you know what was shocking is just to see Moxley put his hands on Willow
because
it's so unusual, right? We don't see the man on woman violence. It's almost taboo. We don't see it on the mainstream. So to see that, that was shocking.
Well, and the only thing I will nitpick at that is AEW production missed Willow throwing Mox through the table. So clearly he's looking for revenge because she threw him through the table. She, you know, so like by not being able to capture that on camera and only seeing the carnage afterwards, I think as good as that moment was, and then it was a centerpiece of, oh man, she's really hurt. Like, it just hits that 10% more if you get the video of her shoving Mox into that table.
Jimmy Uso against Gunther. Did you guys bring that up?
No,
we did not.
Yeah. Because of the blood from Jimmy Uso. And I just can't wait for Brian, cause I know he's got his teeth just sunk into it. He just can't wait to say that the Jimmy Uso Gunther match is going to be better than the Jey Uso Gunther match. It's already there. I know the take's already there.
I'm going to write that down. That is a good one.
Son of a bitch.
Big Jim for MVP. Main event, Big Jim. Let's go.
See, Dave, just wait for it. Just wait for it.
It's going to happen.
He's going to slip that comment in. It's like, oh, I saw more blood with Jimmy. Actually, more competitive match. And it won't be. So when Jey wins, it won't make match of the week.
Why would it?
It's unbelievable.
I mean, now you're gonna have to break your own kid's heart. Your own kid's out there eating all over the place, Brian. Like, you better get on board.
They did the wave, they go yeet. I'm like, we don't need to do that. First of all, don't do the wave. Second of all, don't turn it into a yeet. What are we doing here?
The only way to wave is if you're gonna turn it into a yeet.
Charlotte Flair against Meechan actually turned out to be pretty good. Of course, Meechan had the injury beforehand, but I thought it straightened up to be a pretty good matchup.
Okay.
The other one I'll throw from Collision, they're running it back in the Owen, but Hayter versus Billy Starks from this weekend, I enjoyed.
Yes. Again, did not explain who Billy Starks is to the mass audience. I know who Billy Starks is, but whatever. Like, still a fine match. I don't know if that should have closed the show, though.
Yeah,
again,
that was a choice.
Could you explain to me the cliffhanger after that one?
Mm. They're going to face each other again in the first round of the Owen at some point.
Okay. All right.
I wish I had a better answer for you. But those are our matches of the week. We've got a pay-per-view coming up this weekend. So, of course, we're going to be able to react to that. Build toward WrestleMania as they continue to add more matches for WrestleMania 41. But if you happen to miss earlier our conversation with Kyle Fletcher, make sure you check out youtube.com/@goodkarmawrestling. See that entire conversation, or if you just want to hear him talk about Takeshi and his cock again, go relive that moment. youtube.com/@goodkarmawrestling. Comment, subscribe. It's a thing that happened. It's a thing that happened. Hood.
So good. So funny.
I don't know what else to say. So that's it. We'll talk about all those things. Maybe not the thing that Kyle Fletcher mentioned next week, right here on GKW.